Every commercial real estate asset class appears to be benefiting from a robust economic recovery. That's the theme running through all the presentations at this week's Real Estate Outlook Conference, held for the 19th year by the Urban Land Institute's Philadelphia chapter. More than 500 commercial real estate leaders gathered in the grand ballroom of the Union League Club in Center City, Philadelphia, to hear the perspectives of CEOs representing industrial, hospitality, and retail malls, and to digest the annual Emerging Trends in Real Estate report, jointly produced by ULI and PricewaterhouseCoopers. It's now in its 40th year. Bill Hankowski is CEO of Liberty Property Trust. Liberty's refocusing its portfolio away from office properties to a singular focus on the industrial sector. Hankowski says demand for industrial facilities for distribution of goods to consumers continues to rise and hit historic benchmarks across the board.
It's the most dramatic, strongest market the industrial space has ever seen in its history, no matter what statistic you look at. The vacancy rate nationally now is 4.3%, the lowest number CBRE has ever tracked. You've had 34 consecutive quarters of positive net absorption. In many markets, you're seeing the highest rents you've ever seen. And the converse of that is in many markets, you're seeing the lowest cap rates you've ever seen. Properties are trading in Southern California, starting with a 3 or North Jersey. And even in, quote, secondary markets, most of the trades now start with a 5 in terms of a cap rate.
Hankowski says Liberty's operating in a majority of the key industrial markets in the U.S.
Where we operate represents about 2/3 of all the industrial absorption that happens nationally. So we think we're kind of in the right places at this point with a fairly robust and large portfolio. We have about 98 million square feet of industrial real estate. And we've got about another 8.6 million square feet under construction right now in our development pipeline, taking it to about 106 million square feet.
And Hankowski says his company is actively developing environmentally responsible industrial properties.
We currently have 30 projects under construction. As I said, they represent about 8.6 million square feet, and it's about $900 million of activity. This is the largest development pipeline, if you take the pipeline and put it over your sort of market cap, among anybody in our space. So we're the most active developer. We're also, as we have always been, very active with regard to sustainability in that pipeline. So every industrial building we build is LEED certified, and we often have been the first person to do it in a particular market or of a particular product type.
Rising consumer demand for rapid delivery of purchases is also changing industrial space planning in fundamental ways, Hankowski told the audience.
So e-commerce has been an unbelievable structural change element in terms of the industrial space. 10 years ago, most of us didn't know we needed something delivered to our house in 2 days. And 5 years ago, you didn't know you needed it in a day. And you didn't know 3 years ago you needed it today in an hour. That change in the customer-consumer expectation about delivery times has had a dramatic, fundamental effect on industrial space. So when it first started, I need it in 2 days, it created fulfillment centers. Big million square foot buildings, Amazon's our number one customer on the industrial side, which would serve a big metro, maybe even serve a big region. So you could, we have 2 Amazon operations in the Lehigh Valley, which serve the Northeast. But as you began more and more to say, I need it sooner and sooner, you had to bring that facility closer and closer to the metro to deal with turnaround times. So the new phenomenon is the last mile, which everybody talks about. I think there's a little bit of overhype with last mile. Not every flex building in every metro is going to turn into an e-commerce building. That's a little bit of the current expectation. But there is a need for that space. And it is happening in smaller buildings. So instead of it being a million square foot distribution fulfillment center, it's being done in 100,000 square feet or 75,000 square feet. So it's very high volume, very fast delivery. And by the way, the range of customers has gotten wider. So now Best Buy is looking for space like that. Home Depot, Wayfair, Restoration Hardware. So it's not just that classic e-commerce players.
Ultimately, Hankowski says he thinks the changes in the industrial market will be positive for the Philadelphia region.
What's this all mean for this region? It means there'll be more industrial development in the Delaware Valley. Historically, this region was served from two places. It was served from southern New Jersey, which continues to be a strong market. Historically, it was Gloucester County. We all know Pure Land, 322, lots of industrial buildings there. Exit 6 on the New Jersey Turnpike, where the Pennsylvania and New Jersey Turnpikes intersect, has now become a new strong market with the widening of the New Jersey Turnpike. So lots of new development and operations there. People have gone into Salem County. This is because, again, you can't find sites. The result is that people are looking everywhere to find locations. And the other interesting aspect of this will be, and you're seeing it, the beginning of industrial development in the city as you go for that last mile.
Reviewing the retail sector was Joseph Corradino. He's the chairman and CEO of Preet, which owns traditional shopping malls around the country. Corradino says he's trying to change people's perception of the traditional shopping mall.
I coined a little phrase. I like to say it's not your grandmother's mall.
Corradino also disputes the conventional wisdom that malls are struggling to survive.
The other thing that is, I think, been talked about probably ad nauseum is the death of the mall. You know, I go to a cocktail party and somebody says to me, "What do? And I say, "I'm a mall CEO." And they say, "Oh." And I say, "Well, you know, mall business is really a good business. And, you know, online is 10%, you know, and by the end of the thing, I'm feeling really defensive."
He went on to review some positive traffic figures at malls owned by Preet.
So I want to read to you a release that was issued about 15 minutes ago, right? Viewmont Mall, Scranton, Pennsylvania. Traffic at the mall year over year is up 11%. And that's as a result of adding Dick's Sporting Goods, Field & Stream, Home Goods. At Woodland Mall in Grand Rapids, traffic is up 13%. We count all the people that come into our properties. It's up 13%. That's as a result of adding a number of interesting tenants, and soon to add Urban Outfitters, Altered State, and REI. At Moorestown Mall, which you probably are more familiar with, traffic is up 9%. Now that's an interesting one. We got rid of a 260,000 square foot Macy's. Big store, right? We got rid of a 260,000 square foot Macy's, and at this point are about a third the way through our redevelopment, have only added HomeSense, which is a higher end home goods. It's their new concept, one of the first five in the country. Only added HomeSense and a Five Below. Those two small stores occupy about 50,000 square feet of that 260,000 square feet. Traffic is up 9%.
Traditional retailers, Corradino says, are not surrendering ground to online retailers, but they're learning to integrate an online component into their bricks and mortar stores.
Last night I was at Cherry Hill Mall, and I went to a place called Balsam. Balsam is probably the largest online Christmas decoration supplier in the country. I bought a tree at Cherry Hill Mall. It's going to arrive at my house, decorate it. Okay? It's going to arrive decorated. You literally snap it up. It has lights on it that you press a button and they're white. You press another button, they're colored. Right? And we've seen a real merging and purging of online and bricks and mortar. And I think to Bill's point about the need for people to want to get products quickly, 65% of the stores in our malls do what is called BOPUS. And BOPUS is buy online, pick up in store. So they don't get it to you tomorrow, they get it to you the same day. So when you order something from Macy's, you can get it today, right? If you like Bill's tie, you can get it today, right? So clearly there's been a, certainly by the department stores, a very voracious approach to the various online retailers getting you merchandise quickly by responding to it, by getting it to you even more quickly. And the interesting thing about BOPUS is when someone picks up something at one of our properties, there's a 73% chance that they're going to make an ancillary purchase at the property.
In the hospitality sector, customers are looking for luxury and they're willing to pay for it. That's according to Jay Shaw. He's the CEO of Hersha Hospitality Trust. Shaw says the revenue per available room is growing strongly in most of the markets where the company has hotels.
With stable economic environment, we're expecting to see about 3% growth nationally in RevPAR this year. RevPAR, for those of you unfamiliar with, is revenue per available room and the leading metric in hotels. Next year, the expectation is that it will be closer to 2.5% to 2.6%. We'll be finishing up our markets. New York City has really recovered well. At Hersha, our New York City portfolio will do 5.5% year-over-year growth this year. Boston, fairly strong, but a slightly less less strong convention calendar is going to result in about 3.4% year-over-year growth. Philadelphia was a strong quarter for us in the third quarter particularly, and that was driven primarily by just continued strength in Philadelphia's life science sector and the corporate sector, and leisure visitation to Philadelphia continues to be very strong. Recently, a record in Philadelphia was broken with 91% occupancy on Saturday, which is an interesting indicator for the leisure market here in Philadelphia. But Philadelphia for the year will end up at about 2.5%. Washington, D.C. is struggling, and we expect it to be a laggard, but that is going to be -6. And Florida and the West Coast are both in the 4-4.5% range. So generally speaking, a very strong outlook for the year. And we expect next year to be strong in all of these markets as well.
The hotel industry's also been largely successful, says Shaw, in fighting back against disruptor companies like Airbnb and online travel booking sites.
Airbnb and online travel agencies, which have now become sort of a duopoly,
right,
between Expedia and Bookings.com, you know, all of those brands are all owned by those two larger parent companies. I think there, you know, we're, you know, with the brands and even with independents, I think with scale, we're able to negotiate better with the OTAs, and so we're not paying the obnoxiously high commission rates and driving, you know, discounts. You know, we're able to maintain pricing integrity and driving more original demand through our own websites, particularly for our independent and luxury hotels, and the brands are driving more demand through their websites, which really takes a lot of power away from the intermediaries. Airbnb, as I mentioned earlier, has been a bit of a threat, but I think their regulation to make the company more compliant with life safety ordinances and issues, taxation in the different municipalities, and to really not allow people to create illegal hotels, which is what was happening. And you were starting to see developers building buildings for Airbnb purposes. So they'd have a multi-unit building and they'd be operating at it as a hotel, but not really complying with all the public accommodation requirements that a hotel would have. So there was real safety concerns and taxation concerns. But for now, it seems to be at a stable place. And I think we've absorbed the impacts of both and have learned to move on beyond it. But I don't know, it's hard to put a finger on anything. There's lots of little disruptors you see, but I can't think of one that's going to grow into something that's so significant we call threat.
Now, expansion of the definition of the modern office is one of the biggest adjustments taking place in the office sector. Jerry Sweeney is president, CEO, and trustee of Brandywine Realty Trust.
It used to be that you went to a definitive place to work. Well, with technology and other alternatives, the city really has now become the workplace, not one specific location.
Sweeney says cap rates are relatively stable for office properties around the country.
Office cap rates seem like they're pretty stable. We've seen a compression in a number of the markets we're in. We're a big footprint in Austin, Texas, and that market continues to do very well. But generally, stability of cap rates. We haven't really seen any impact of interest rates ticking up yet, but invariably, we'll see where that goes. Interestingly, though, In the last year or so, we've seen the appetite for large office portfolios, so big movements of money into office, somewhat abated. The bid lists are a little bit lighter, and it seems as though a lot of the large institutional investors we talk to, who are traditionally receivers for office product, have their pocketbooks full. Most markets around the country are experiencing, thank goodness, some effective rent growth. So rental rate growth around the country tends to be between 2% and 5% on an annual basis. Now, that's the good news. The bad news is, you know, effective rents are growing at a slower pace, primarily due to the rising costs of generally construction costs, but also on tenant improvement costs as well.
Nevertheless, it's clear to Sweeney the market for office properties is facing a number of challenges.
We do continue to face the certainty of declining demand through space densification. There's a broader array of viable alternatives, co-working, flex, fitness. Everybody has co-working. Joe has co-working in some of his malls. You know, I'm actually waiting for one of my daughters to come home and say that she just came home from a nail salon. They have co-working there as well. It's literally one of those businesses where everyone's focused on co-working. There's over 7,500 companies in the country today who tout themselves as co-working organizations, and I'll chat about that in a moment. Certainly rising construction costs, increasing regulation. You would think that in most environments, the focus would be on smoothing out some of the regulatory hurdles we face to create jobs and improve neighborhoods, but in a number of situations, it's actually getting more difficult to do. At one level, that's a great barrier to entry, but at another level, it really does extend out the risk profile of delivering a project. Tight labor supply, you heard some of the other speakers talk about that, clearly impacting every part of our business. And really kind of anticipating some of those trends, if I look at Brandywine and where we've been and where we are and where we're going, today we have less square footage but higher product quality than we had 5 years ago.
Looking at overall economic trends at the conference was Lauren Gilchrist. She's a senior vice president for research at the brokerage firm Jones Lang LaSalle, which goes by its initials, JLL. Gilchrist says real estate markets across the country are being driven by the search for talent.
Unemployment in the U.S. right now is 3.7%. Unemployment for people with a bachelor's degree or more is 2%. This is far beyond the conditions of full employment at this point in time, which means that wages have to rise, which means that competition for people is fierce.
The Philadelphia region's population growth is somewhat anemic compared to other markets overall, but Gilchrist says there are pockets of population growth.
And when we look across the suburbs and we look across the region and the city combined, what we see is something rather unimpressive. 3% population growth over a period of 6 years is really next to nothing. That is really just below replacement. And when you look at the markets that are much more dynamic, like the Sun Belt markets and the Texas markets that are driven by energy, we pale in comparison on a population basis. That doesn't mean that's bad news. The story is vastly different around the region overall. So when we break down those 11 counties that comprise our metropolitan statistical area, there are pockets of growth that are significantly higher than what we are seeing in the region overall. So when I look across the region, the counties that are growing the fastest are Newcastle County, Delaware, Chester County, Pennsylvania, as well as Philadelphia. Philadelphia is a newcomer to this list overall because we really only started reversing our population loss due to outmigration and births not exceeding deaths within the past 5 or 6 years. So this is really significant. When I look at South Jersey, I'm a little more concerned about South Jersey. The population growth there is even less significant, and in fact, in most cases, Southern New Jersey is losing people. And I think if you are a landlord across any asset class in Southern New Jersey, you are likely feeling this.
And Gilchrist says the depth of the talent pool is one of the main factors that probably led to Amazon's decision to locate part of its HQ2 project in Long Island City near New York.
So I, like you, have spent a lot of time thinking about Amazon HQ2, why we didn't get it, what some of the confounding factors might be. And for those that don't know, I'm a native Pittsburgher. Don't hate me. But Pittsburgh has a lot of really great engineering schools, and they have seen a lot of technology companies move to that city. Facebook, Uber, you can continue naming. Google was one of the first ones, in fact. Move to that city to be able to access both the students and the professors that are coming out of Carnegie Mellon. So if we think about Amazon being a tech company, if we think about their insatiable demand for talent, if we think about the fact that that talent is growing most in science, technology, engineering, and math fields for that company, and we think about the fact that they believe that they are on the cutting edge of innovation, the number of STEM degrees at the master's and PhD level are going to factor significantly into their overall perception of a market and where they want to go. I said, let's measure this, let's put some real numbers behind this. And when you look at the fact that New York and DC have graduated 31,000 advanced degree holders in 1 year with those two cities combined, and you think about the fact that this company is looking for 50,000 people in technical occupations, you begin to understand, despite everything else, why our 6,000 STEM degree holders might not cut it. So as sad as I was to not see HQ2 come to Philadelphia, I wasn't totally sure where it would happen in the first place, but I think that this set of numbers tells you most of what you need to know on this dimension.
The ULI event also serves as the launch every year for the Emerging Trends in Real Estate report that ULI produces jointly with PricewaterhouseCoopers. The report is now in its 40th year of publication. Among the other top trends highlighted in the report is the rise of the 18-hour suburb that's causing millennials to start reconsidering the idea of living in suburbs with urban amenities and good schools, a dramatic expansion in amenities to attract and keep tenants in new office and multifamily properties, disruptors ranging from package delivery to autonomous vehicles that are forcing redesign and amenity shifts for residential and commercial developers, and environmental, social, and governance practices that are becoming increasingly important to investors. Reporting from Philadelphia for GlobeStreet.com, this is Steve Lubetkin, State Broadcast News.